This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
It's time for real stories from those who make our region and our country their home. Time for making yourself at home, thanks to the support from the Ethnic Communities Development Fund.
Hello, hello, here it's Access Radio Taranaki, 104.4 FM, your voice, your choice. We are here in the studio making ourselves at home in this beautiful day of Monday. Hello, and my name is Alina. I'm originally from Romania, and I have today my co-host today, Clara. She's originally from Spain, and we run this show, Making Yourself at Home, each Monday from 11 till 12 p.m., and it's about migrants who made New Zealand their home, and not only, we also have guests all over the world that we talk with. How are you, Clara, today?
I'm very well. Thank you, Alina. Good morning, everyone. It's nice to be back here. Yeah.
Yes, amazing.
Yeah, Monday morning radio show. Yeah, really happy to be here and to have our new special guest, Alex. Alex is from Peru, and she first arrived in New Zealand back in 2015 with a working holiday visa, and backpacked around New Zealand for a year. And she fell in love with New Plymouth. She also met her husband while being here in New Zealand, in New Plymouth, and moved back to Peru for 3 years. And after that, they returned in 2020, just before COVID. So she likes windsurfing and hiking, which is both things we can do here in Taranaki. She has two kids, and she loves spending time outside with them, doing walks, and spending lots of time in nature. Welcome, Alex. How are you today?
Hi. Hi, Clara and Alina. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great. It's nice to be here.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah, and I was looking forward to meet you. I think we met one time, and I was so curious to know more about you, and it's a great opportunity to have you today. Yeah. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about you and why New Zealand?
Well, it all started because, yeah, after I finished university, I went hiking, and I was in Patagonia, and this is a very long story, so I'm just going to tell it.
We have time. That's what we are here for.
Yeah. So this is my first long hiking trip, and I had taken my best friend from school who had never done any walks in her life. And I was like, yes, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to help you. But no, I had the cheapest tent available, and it was soaked. And I was crying because my pajamas were soaked, and my sleeping bag was soaked, and everything was wet from the rain. And anyway, so then she went and she was like, I'm going to take charge. And then she went and rented a tent. And I was just crying there. And then this guy came along, a guy from Chile. And he was like, oh, you know, I just came back from doing my working holiday in Australia. And it was wonderful. And I was like, wait, what's that? Tell me more about what a working holiday is. So he started talking about Australia and going there for a year. So then when I went back home after this trip, I looked into it, and back in those days, there weren't any working holiday visas available for Australia, for Peruvians, but they had for New Zealand, and apparently no one knew about it. So I was like, okay, I'll have a look at this. And I don't know if I told my mom back in those times, but I just applied for it and got the visa because no one knew about it. So there were still, you know, there were 100 visas a year, but this was like 6 months afterwards, and I just got the visa, and I was like, okay, great. And
that's it, huh?
And that was
good. Not that it was an easy process, because like I have heard, like in Spain, like many people want to come, and it's not easy. Like you have to be the first one to click the button to say apply.
Yeah, and I think it is like that now. But back in those days, no one knew about it, and I was really lucky. And I think a week later, I got a job in Lima. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I can just see how this goes, and if not, I just save money and go to New Zealand, because I had a year to go. So that whole year I had my computer background was photos of New Zealand. Like at work, I was at work just looking at photos of New Zealand all day, and just thinking about all the walks I would do and all the things I would do. And yeah, at some point I just quit my job and bought a one-way ticket and came here.
Wow, amazing. Wow. One-way ticket. Huh?
Yeah, where did you arrive at the beginning?
I arrived in Christchurch because I was obsessed with the South Island. I just wanted to go and see all the mountains and do all the walks there. And I was convinced I was going to stay and live in Wanaga or in Queenstown and just be there forever. But then I bought a van, but back in those days I knew nothing about mechanics or cars or anything. So I just bought the worst van ever. Wow. It had like almost 400,000 kilometers and it was just falling apart. And I was like, yeah, this looks really cool. But no, so the van eventually broke down in Auckland after 2 months of traveling. And I had met someone here in Taranaki, a good friend from Okato, and she was a windsurfer. And she told me, come to Taranaki, stay here, we'll figure it out. See what you can do next. You know, you've windsurfed here, you can find a community here. So I just thought, let's give this a go. Because I didn't have any plans, I didn't want to stay in Auckland, I didn't know where to go, I didn't have a car. So it was really just like that, just knowing this one person who told me, come here, it's summer, it's windy. And once I was here, I just really loved it. And even though I went then to Wellington and moved around a little bit more, I always thought, oh, New Plymouth and Taranaki is just a really, really special place.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And we hear this from a lot of guests. The New Plymouth is amazing, right, Clara?
It's a common thread that we hear about, like, people loving it here, especially in New Plymouth and Taranaki, and people that have lived in other places in New Zealand that are also very nice, but there's something special here in New Plymouth.
Right?
Yeah, we also want to keep it a secret. A little bit of a secret.
A little bit, right?
Yeah, I just thought it ticked a lot of boxes for me. It had amazing waves and ocean and the mountain. And, you know, like I could windsurf and go on the mountain on the same day. It was mind-blowing. It's such a special place. I was really happy to be here and just wanted to stay. And I look back at my photos from those times and I had some photos where I was like, this is it. I want to stay here. I want to stay here. And then I had this 1 year visa. So I tried to stay and get a job and extend my visa. But then it didn't work out. And it's funny how life happens sometimes because I obviously ended up meeting my husband.
Yeah.
And got a job back in Peru. So yeah, went back to Peru. And eventually he came to Peru as well. We got married and then we came back here. So it's just funny how, you know, like when things are sort of meant to be, they just
they're
on their way.
Yeah.
So how was that like process of after a year here? How were you feeling when you had to go back to Peru?
Yeah.
With the idea that you wouldn't know if you would be coming back, no? Or how was that feeling for you at the time?
Yeah, it was interesting because growing up, or at least in my, you know, youth, I was always very much, I don't know, not a city girl. And Lima is a massive city. It's 10 million people and, you know, cars and traffic and just crazy busy. And I always wanted to move out of Lima. So I didn't want to go back to that after being in New Plymouth for such a long time, and you know, you get used to the 5 minute commute.
It's true.
But then I also thought, oh, it will be nice to go back to Peru and just have, you know, an adult life and have this good job. And then I was flatting, which I didn't do before because before I was living with my parents. And it was great. I think it was a good experience just to get that experience of the life you can build for yourself at home, but different.
Yeah.
So I ended up really liking my life in Lima, even though it wasn't, you know, it was crazy still when traffic and busy, but I just found a way to make it work really nicely. And New Zealand was always there because my partner or my husband now, he had a permanent residency. So we were always thinking it's an option to move back. And in the end, things just happened and we just decided to come here.
How long did you decide to come to New Plymouth and move here?
I'm not sure exactly how the decision happened because I was in Peru for 3 years.
Yeah.
Between my two trips to New Zealand. And when my husband came to visit me that first time, he asked me if I was wanting to move out of Peru to Australia or New Zealand or somewhere else. And I said, yeah, I'm open. So that's when we first talked about it, about not staying in Peru forever. And I think in the next 2.5 years, we just carried on talking about it. And I had ideas about maybe studying overseas. And his family's in Australia, so we kept thinking, like, oh, maybe, let's see what happens.
It's quite near, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But we just loved it here. And I remember the thinking process was, okay, let's go to Australia. Okay, where in Australia? Oh, actually, New Zealand is so cool. Let's go to New Zealand. Okay, let's go to Wellington. But actually, New Plymouth is really cool. Maybe we should just go back to New Plymouth. And I was like, okay, let's just go back to New Plymouth.
Yeah, it was quite an easy decision, right? It looks like.
Yeah, we already knew. I mean, he had been here for 3.5 years before that, so he had established friendships and work connections, and, you know, just knowing a city makes it a lot more attractive than going somewhere completely new. So yeah, we were really happy to have come back, and it was great because we were here for a month and a half, and then it was COVID, so it just happened all really well timed in a way, because we just spent lockdown here, and I feel like if we hadn't come here for the lockdown, we would have stayed in Peru and we would probably still be there.
Or perhaps needed to wait for a year and a half or a couple of years to be able to come and travel to New Zealand. And when you came back for the second time, did you notice any change? It's true that it was not like a long period, like the period that you were in Peru, but did you notice anything that has changed in New Plymouth? Or surprised you from the first time that you were here?
Well, I guess it was different because the first time I was on holiday and I wanted to stay here and I wanted to make friends, but I didn't get to connect so much with people because I was always thinking I may leave. But in the second time, it was more focusing on I need to build a community and I need to build, you know, good friendships and get to know people. And also on the work side, I was really lucky because I got a job as soon as I arrived, like pretty much the next day I arrived.
It's
I had
meant
an interview.
To be, right?
Yeah, it was great. You know, in little New Plymouth, where everyone sort of knows each other from some ways. So my manager back then had known my husband. And he was like, yeah, okay, you know, my interview was on Tuesday, and he told me, can you start on Friday? I was like, yeah,
amazing.
Sure.
Yeah, amazing.
Like, within a week of arriving, so I was really lucky with that. So I think that made a difference, just being able to be in the community because it was more of a community-focused role. And just get there. And even with lockdowns and everything, I was still very, really busy doing all this community work. Mm-hmm.
So what is your what job now? So you said you work in the community.
Well,
what kind of job you do? Yeah.
Yeah, so this my first job was with Sustainable Taranaki.
Nice.
I was the behavior change lead there. So I was running a project on understanding sustainable habits in the community. So it was a bit of a research project, but we also ran pilots and community events. That was a 3-year project. So after that, I moved on to the Ministry for the Environment, which is where I'm working now. And I work initially also in behavior change, so of implementing waste reduction policies. And right now it's more policy development, but still for waste and more like organic waste policies.
Wow, amazing. Mm-hmm. You're bringing so much things to the community, right? Because we all need to be more sustainable.
Yeah. It was great research that was done back in those years for Sustainable Taranaki, because it was just so good to understand what the community was after. We had all these different topics like cycling and reducing waste and electricity and just understanding where everyone was at. Mm-hmm. And now everyone is really on their own journey to be more sustainable. Not everyone is doing everything perfectly, but just a little bit here and there. And it's a journey. You can't just, you know, expect everyone to do the same things.
Exactly.
But it's so good. And I love that part of my work where you have to understand the context and understand what drives people and what are the barriers for their behaviors and how can you engage with them to sort of, promote these sustainable habits that you want to see.
Amazing.
Yeah, nice. And I know you have been already involved with another community project, the Energy Community Accelerator or Activator.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
So I've recently joined Community Energy Taranaki, and Community Energy Taranaki is part of the Community Energy Activator that is a 13-week program that is supporting local organizations or local groups that want to start programs or projects that bring energy from the community side. And it's amazing. There's so many really brilliant people involved in this program. From building solar panels for schools, and also getting involved with building different housing projects. And what our project is about is Electrify Your Fare, and here we are supporting households to electrify their homes. It's aligned with Rewiring Aotearoa, so it's a lot around electrifying and also opting out of gas for energy in your home, obviously reducing emissions at the same time. And it's funny because we were one of the households in the first pilot last year, at the start of this year, and we got rid of gas, which was wonderful because now we don't have gas in the house.
We want also to get rid of gas. Maybe we can be part
maybe
of
you
the
can
project.
Join Alina.
love that.
Be great. Yeah, and there's so much information and so much valuable research on this. How it is, it's a good way to save money, but also to have a healthier home, and obviously be more sustainable.
Mm.
And what week are you at? Like halfway the program?
A bit over halfway. I think we were maybe in like week 8 or 9. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's next after that?
After the activator. I mean, the activator is great because every week has a different topic around sort of defining and working on what your program is about. So in one week we're seeing like financing options, and the other one we're seeing what is your vision and your mission and who are your stakeholders. So it's around building this project, and the idea is that after the activator you have a more solid grasp of what your project is about, and then you can use that to apply for funding to actually make it happen. Or many of the projects already have funding, and it's really helpful just to get that understanding of what you can do and how you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And also the group itself is such a good way to know everyone who is involved in the space and support each other, so that's great.
And what has been the biggest learning so far?
Oof, I don't know. That there's just so much to learn. Like for me, because I'm a psychologist, so everything that's sort of engineering and energy feels really, really weird for me. I'm not a numbers person. So whenever they start talking about, I don't know, kilowatts and things like that, I'm like, what?
Emission reductions and tons of CO2.
Yeah, it's tricky, and it's hard for me to have that. I don't know, the concept itself, like how much is a kilowatt hour? And I'm like, oh my God, this is why I study psychology, because physics or, you know, engineering is so hard for me to grasp, whereas people, for me, it's a bit easier.
It's easier, right?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
It's quite a big shift, right, from psychology to energy.
Yeah.
How does it fit, or how do you combine them together?
Yeah, for me, it's more of, you know, you need behavior.
Yeah,
because you can have the science, but you need people to adopt the science.
Mm.
So you still need to have the behavior and sort of translate the science to make it sort of accessible and understandable for people. And that's where I come in.
Mm.
I'm the one who's doing the people work and how to frame the messages or what activities would be ideal or how to, you know, make it easier or make it more attractive for people to adopt certain behaviors.
Yeah, I feel like that's very important because, and it's perhaps a good reminder for people that are coming more from a science or engineering background, how you can communicate in a way that everyone can understand. And it's something that, as an engineer, I think we should have learned that earlier in our careers, like thinking that, you can say the same message in different ways depending on your audience, and not everyone is going to understand all the numbers, and perhaps they don't need that, but they need to understand how it's going to work. So I guess having people that are not coming from a science background is very useful to acknowledge that need of good communication.
Yeah, definitely. And understanding, you know, what drives people to do something. So for some people, it might be you're saving money. So that's what motivates them to adopt that behavior. Or it could be, oh, it's easier, or it's just convenient. Or it might be because your neighbor is doing it, so you thought it was cool because your neighbor has solar panels and you want that too. So there's different reasons why people adopt habits. And we often think that, oh, no, this is the smartest decision because it's, you know, it saves you money and that's the main driver. But for some people, money might not be an issue. Or for some people, it might be more of a, you know, a health thing because they don't want to have gas at home because they might have a child that is sick. So things like that, you just have to understand what will, what will resonate more with people. And it's so interesting. It's such a big space for research and for, action, I guess. Like you said, like bridging the information to action gap.
And tell us a little bit about Peru, you know, and I've never been to Peru. I know that it's beautiful. I know some people here in town. How is life there?
Oh, Peru is great. it's a beautiful place. Every time my mom comes to visit, she brings pretty much like a full suitcase full of food.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what type of food?
So normally sauces, so many sauces, like Peruvian chili sauces or, I don't know, all these Peruvian ingredients are amazing. And lots of cookies. Yeah, my kids love Peruvian cookies as well. And chips and alfajores. I don't know, like it's similar to Chile and Argentina, but I don't know, just so much. And it's things that, I mean, I could find here, I guess. I could survive without them, but it's so nice to have stuff from home. And, you know, I never cook rice without my sazon arroz, which is like, a little powder of, I don't know, garlic, and I don't know what it has, salt, and you just spray it on the rice. And I always, like, if I don't use that, my kids don't eat the rice.
Really?
And so I didn't bring it from Peru. Get that in New Zealand.
No, I mean, I guess I could improvise. I don't know what the actual thing is, but like, you know, my sazon arroz is wonderful.
So it's just some salt with garlic? And
I think so. It's like a garlic salt, but I don't really know what else is in it because when I've used just garlic salt,
yes.
It's not the same.
It's not the same, no.
Oh,
so
wow.
I don't know. And things like that, I just, like my cupboard right now because my mom is visiting is full of Peruvian cookies and chocolates and... but yeah, besides food, because Peru has the best food.
We love food, you know, so we love to talk
about
food.
Different countries.
No, I mean, I miss the food, not just the things that can come in a suitcase, but, you know, because I'm not such a good cook of Peruvian foods, but I love ceviche, and I love Peruvian desserts are another level, in my opinion. And I mean, food is so good, but also because food is such a big part of the culture. So when you meet people, you don't really go for a coffee, you go for lunch or you go for dinner and you sit down, you have a big meal and then, you know, you chat over a big, nice, good Peruvian meal. And, you know, if the sun is shining, then 90% of the people will go and eat ceviche with a sea view, probably.
If you can. Yeah.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I love ceviche.
It's so good. And, you know, that's where all my family is. I grew up there. I went to uni there, so I pretty much spent my first, I don't know, 25 years in Peru, in Lima. And also Peru is just so different everywhere. So Lima is the capital. It's huge. And it's a city. And you can drive 4 hours towards the mountains, and then you are at almost 5,000 meters in the snow, and then you keep driving for another 2 hours, and then you're in the jungle, and there's coconuts, and it's warm, and it's tropical, and you can go and swim in the river.
Oh, amazing.
And that's, you know, our road trips growing up were always, like, going to the jungle for the holidays or something for a week, and you get that variety of landscapes, and then also, obviously, of people and of foods and of traditions, so it's that massive mix of culture that I think makes Peru so rich as a country, rich in these things, not so much in rich in money because but I love it there, and it would be nice to have stayed, I guess, because of friends and family. But then obviously there's a lot of things that are different here, you know, like in Peru my kids would not be able to just, I don't know, run around in the park freely, or you know, have a backyard the way that we have a backyard, yeah. And have a gate that, you know, I feel like in Peru, if we had a house like this, people would just jump over the fence and...
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know. I often leave my car unlocked and no one's going to come and break into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there's always these trade-offs, I guess, that we make.
Safety, right? And
when
I think
decide to live in a different place.
Yeah, and I think also for our kids... was similar, you know, like coming here and see how much free they are in the park and also going to school, like, you know, walking.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing, you know, you can't have this in big cities. Like in Romania, we didn't have that. So, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, no, we love it here. It's a beautiful community, too. We've got good friends and a lot of migrant friends as well. And the kids are around the same age, so we all understand each other. Because it's hard not to have the family around, but it's nice when you have, you know, a nice community of friends that are all in the same space and we can just support each other when we can.
Yeah. Mm. And do you have like a big Peru community? There are many people from Peru here?
No, we don't have many people from Peru. A few, but I would say, yeah, less than 10, definitely.
Wow, yeah.
Maybe even 5, I'm not mm-hmm. sure. But yeah, there is a big Latin community, which is nice. And it's nice, for example, because my daughter, she was born here, but I've always spoken to her in Spanish. She's 4 and a half now. And after we went to Peru when she was 3, she started only speaking in Spanish to me. Before, she was sort of mixing a bit of Spanglish. But ever since she was 3, she only speaks in Spanish with me. And now she's met like a little friend from Argentina, and they become super close and they play in Spanish. And I just love that.
Oh, amazing.
Because they're at school in the same classroom and the teachers are amazed because they are playing with other kids in English, but then suddenly they turn around and start talking to each other in Spanish.
In Spanish.
And
oh,
for
wow.
me, that's so special that, you know, they could find that little friendship where they can also practice the language that they have learned at home.
Oh, this is amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. So that they can practice both. Yeah.
Yes.
How do you do that with your kids, Alina? Because
oh, yes.
your kids will speak English, Romanian,
yes, and German. Yeah. So my husband is from Germany. It's quite interesting because I talk with them in Romanian, but they reply in English, so they don't talk with me in Romanian. And when my mother is coming here, they talk with her in Romanian as much as they can. But when my mother-in-law comes here, so she's here at the moment, she's from Germany, so because they know that she knows English, they talk with her in English, not in German. So they don't put an extra effort.
But they know how to speak.
They know how to speak, but not so good. I mean, they understand, but they don't know how to speak so good. So we have to take them to Germany in order to have more time there to learn it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you go with your children? Like, how many times did you visit it from the moment you are here?
To Peru, we've been, I think, once a year, maybe. So like three times. And I think that was a big turning point for my daughter, because she was speaking in English to me. And I have videos where I spoke in Spanish, she replied in English. But then we went to Peru for like 6 weeks, I think. And in that trip, she realized that she couldn't just speak in English, because adults could understand English and reply in Spanish, but the kids wouldn't speak in English. The kids were
exactly.
like, no, if you want to play with me, you have to talk in Spanish. I don't understand the words because kids don't speak English.
Yeah.
So then I think that after 6 weeks immersed in Spanish, she did that switch, and ever since she's
immersed, yeah.
Yeah, so good.
And I think when the kids are getting a little bit bigger, like I see, we met our... my brother-in-law with his kids, and their kids wanted to learn English, so my kids were talking in English with them because they wanted to practice. But I think it would be good for my kids that they practice their German.
Yeah.
So it's always a compromise, right?
Yeah.
So how was the school for them here, and what is different from Peru for your children?
Oh, well, my daughter, well, in both cases, I'm not sure how I would do parenting in Peru, to be honest, because I don't know if my kids would be going to daycare from so little, because obviously I took a year off from work, and so my two kids, they started daycare when they were one. And I don't know if that would have been the case in Peru, because we might have, you know, had my mom or had a nanny or had someone who could have supported or taken the kids while I was working. So they wouldn't have gone to daycare and, you know, being exposed to that environment of daycare with lots of kids and, you know, no family members. But then on the other side, you know, like the schools here or daycares, the approach is so different. It's more like let the kids be. They can be dirty. They can play in the sand. My daughter's preschool is amazing. They've got, you know, so much nature. She climbs on trees and they just do so many great things in nature as well. So I just think that they might not have had that in Peru and that exposure to nature, because even though you can have really nice parks in Peru and it's beautiful if you know obviously where to go, it's still a desert. So you don't get bush like here or forest or, you know, rain. You don't really get rain.
You don't get rain. It's more dry, right?
Yeah.
And it's more like hot there.
It's not too much hotter, but it's very, like, it gets really foggy and misty, but not like rain. When it rains a little bit, people are like, oh my God, what's happening?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Everything collapses because there's no drainage, you know, like storm water systems or anything. It just, everything floods.
Oh, wow.
So it doesn't really happen. It might be like once a year. But so it's amazing how it's different here. And even, you know, outside of school, the activities that are available for little kids here would not exist back in Peru. You know, like all the different like play groups or like things like Trails and Tots, where it's like weekly meetups for moms to go on walks in the bush. Like that was the biggest highlight for me when I was on parental leave and even afterwards, because Wednesdays are luckily my days off, so that's when all the walks were happening. Just being able to, you know, go for a walk in the bush with my kid, maybe sleeping or walking with me, and meeting other moms and just spending time in nature, which is so healing as well.
Yeah.
Like I felt like that is something I would have not had in Peru, and has been so important in my sort of parenting postpartum journey, just being able to go into nature and just be with my children in nature has been so good.
Amazing.
Yeah, we are very lucky here.
Yes, we are, right?
Everywhere. Can you tell us a little bit more about Trails and Tots, in case some of our listeners perhaps they haven't heard about them yet?
Yep.
So, and this is everyone can join, and how can they join if they want to?
Yep, so you can look at the website, Trails and Tots. And they run different programs for children and parents. So there's three different programs at the moment. One is the parent-paced walk, which is basically parents walking with kids in their backpacks or in their front packs. Then we've got the toddler or fano walks, where it's more of a toddler-paced, shorter walk for kids who are walking. And then there's nature play. So nature play are basically sort of facilitated activities in nature where there's sort of nature invitations to art and to play.
I never heard about that. So yeah.
Oh, it's
what
ages?
Amazing.
It's usually for preschool children, but sometimes there's school holiday activities or weekend activities where older kids can join. It's been running for about 2 years. By my good friend Jen, and last year we partnered for a research project where we studied the effects of spending time in nature for new parents on their well-being and their connection to their kids and connection to nature. So we got amazing results on that, because you would think like, oh yeah, obviously it's going to make you happier.
Yeah.
But seeing the actual data of how it made people happier and how supported new parents felt by having these sorts of spaces where they can interact with other parents in their journeys, and having that, just accessible open space, like no judgment from anywhere. Mm. And you can walk slowly because a lot of parents are recovering from postpartum injuries maybe. And everyone's just really supportive, or if you need to change a nappy in the middle of the walk, it's so good because everyone from any walks of life can join. These programs are usually free. The nature play is usually coja based, but everything else is free to join, and you can always contribute a coja because it helps. It's just, you know, it's so nice to be able to facilitate something so valuable as time in nature for parents and for little kids. And well, Trails and Tots has now sort of evolved into a trust. So now it's a charity trust.
Amazing. Wow. So did you do it with your friend, Jen? Or?
I'm now one of the trustees. Mm-hmm. Jen is still going to be like the director. And we are three trustees at the moment. And it's been a month, I think, since the trust has been built. And Trails and Tots is still running. And we are, in the process of sorting out what the next year will look like and how can we make the impact better and who can we align with or partner with to reach more people who will benefit from these type of programs. Because the research is clear, not just the one that we did, but the research out there around benefits of spending time in nature and how, all the sounds and the smells and the wind and everything, how that affects well-being. And there is a lot that is not spoken openly in terms of postpartum journey and how that affects mental health and your body image and your body. I don't know how you feel your body. So just being able to have a space where you can just go for a walk and have one thing a week that's like on Wednesdays, I will go for a walk with this group. It's so valuable for parents. I mean, I know it was for me, and it was just the one routine I had was I'm going to go for a walk.
Amazing, even if it's just to go
out of the house.
It's so great.
Being in nature has so many benefits. And I think like here we have like the two sides. It's so accessible that sometimes we forget how beneficial it can be, or sometimes you take it for granted.
It's
something I hear a lot when I guide forest bathing walks. Sometimes people are like surprised because they are like, oh, I was feeling super good. And perhaps it's because they are used to be in nature, but sometimes they are not used to be in nature, like slowing down and more like present. So I guess with the things that you share, you get both.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Such a great interview. And because we have a little bit time, we will ask you the last question that we ask our people we have on the show. So what would you recommend for people who are new here in New Plymouth and how they can make themselves at home?
I think that at least what worked for me, because I think everyone is different and will have different ways to see this, but for me it worked really well just getting involved in lots of things like volunteering and community events and book clubs or just getting out there and getting to meet people, because it can be hard when you don't know anyone, but if you're just putting yourself in places and being uncomfortable, it can be really, really useful. Like I've always seen myself as an introvert and I really struggle to, make friends, and, it's hard as an adult because just how do you, I just feel really awkward like that. But when I was here the first time in New Zealand, I just joined clubs. I joined the Taranaki Alpine Club, and I remember I went to one of these meetings and I just went to different people and was like, hi, I'm Alex, I'm new, how are you? Like, and I felt really silly doing it, and I remember being so self-conscious of myself. But I ended up meeting, in this case, I met my husband like this. I just went and said, hi, I'm Alex, I'm new. But he was there with other friends, and then we all became friends as well. And it's, sometimes you just have to be a bit brave in a way and just jump out of your comfort zone and try different things.
It's so important that you can just do that, sometimes we forget there are so many people there the same like us and the same like you, like me and Clara. At the beginning it was so hard for us to be part of the to integrate ourselves in this community, but I think slowly things are getting better and better, right?
Yeah, and Taranaki, or at least New Plymouth, is such a good space for that. There's so many groups that you can join, and everyone's really usually really open to accept new members or like being inclusive. That's something that really helped me when I settled here.
Amazing. Yes. Yeah. So is there anything that you would like to say to our listeners?
I'm not sure. Just thank you for having me.
Yes.
Thank you for coming.
Lovely.
Thank you.
If you want to learn more about Trails and Tots and about community energy Taranaki, just check out the websites. And
website, yeah. And we can also share it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, we will add the links to our social media when we share about your episode. So, they can reach out there. And thanks so much for joining.
Thank you.
It was wonderful. I had the feeling that it went super fast and we could have... keep talking about many other topics, but perhaps for another interview
episode, right? And we are looking forward to see you again, Alex, and I will check out those two things that you were saying to us, and see you in the community.
Cool.
And thank you so much for bringing your mom. I know she was here with us all the time.
Thank you Sandy for joining.
you have such a beautiful girl, and looking forward to know her more. I mean, I know Clara knows her, but it's an opportunity for me. Thank you. Enjoy your rest of the day and see you next time, 11 a.m. on Monday morning. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.